Good afternoon. I'm Kathy Lewis. Last year, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services said that nursing homes across the country had to make dramatic reductions in the use of antipsychotic drugs. Well, there's a new study taking place right here in Hampton Roads that has experts exploring how technology is actually helping dementia patients minimize their needs for psychotic medication. It's taking place at the Hoy Nursing Care Center at Westminster Canterbury. Let's talk about it after this news from NPR. Good afternoon, I'm Kathy Lewis. Man, I'm telling you what, we have a beautiful weather forecast for you today. It has all of a sudden become spring outside, and one sure sign of spring is the fact that the food trucks are back out front. We have a fantastic crab cake truck right out front here at 5200 Hampton Boulevard. So if you're driving around in the area, or maybe you're on the campus at Old Dominion University and you don't have lunch plans, why, that might be a fine thing to do. Yummy crab cakes, and they're right here on the food truck, right out in front of the station. We're glad to have you with us today. Speaking of Old Dominion, last night, a very, very interesting lecture from the Friends of Women's Studies in the President's Lecture Series. Ai-Jen Poo, who is a really fascinating woman, came to speak last night about her efforts to develop a culture where we have more dignity with aging. She discovered this passion. She's a real activist. She discovered this passion when she began working with domestic workers across the country. And she, in fact, now directs the National Domestic Workers Alliance. And what she started noticing is that her domestic workers that she was working with were increasingly being asked by their employers to care not just for children, but for the aging parents of her clients. So this led her on this very fascinating journey to really take a look at how we age in this country. There's so many people who are engaged in that process, and why not? We have about 100 million people directly affected by the need for care. There's a great deal of research underway, and when you look at the numbers, you can see why. We have 5 million people who are older than 85 years today, and that's expected to double by 2030. We already have 43 million Americans who are caregivers for family members. So this question of aging and how to do it well has been much on the minds of lots of folks. There are a few places where they do it better than at Westminster Canterbury on the Chesapeake Bay. It's a life plan community, and that term life plan is really at the heart of what they do. I'm so glad to have Ben Uncle with us today. He is the president and CEO of Westminster Canterbury. Nice to have you here. You know, I got to tell you, there are moments where I visit Westminster Canterbury, and we've lots of friends out there, and I think this is pretty neat. It's a wonderful community where you have all kinds of options for people who are entering the later years of their lives in just about any circumstance where life might take them.
That's right. We leverage the power of living in community. I think we were all designed to be in community. And when people get isolated after they retire, and the American dream, which can become almost the American lie, that's a strong word, is that as you age, that rugged individualism and holding on to that house and staying in the house is seen as the Holy Grail. Mm-hmm. Well, the life planners out there, and particularly those who have had parents who have been at Westminster Canterbury before, move in younger and younger, and they see the value of living in community. That's what we're really all about. It's leveraging the power of living in community to age well.
Yeah.
People don't just want to live longer. People want to live longer and better. They want to be active and be engaged in the world, and they want to have their bodies and minds support usefulness. Everybody needs to be needed. And so living in community just creates the right environment to leverage all those things so that you can live well.
That is true through so much of the research, isn't it? I mean, whether you do live on your own, then the research seems very clear that when you have social supports, when you have interaction, when you're getting out every day, if you can do that, or when people are coming into you every day, when you're sort of experiencing other people, it really makes a difference. So tell us how you got to look at this whole issue of dementia. We talked about the imperative here from the federal government, which said as you age, if you are in a situation of dementia, the Medicare and Medicaid services said nursing homes, and we should note again, Westminster Canterbury is not a nursing home, but they do have life planning so mm-hmm. that if you need those services, they're available.
If you need them, they're there. That's right.
But that in those particular facilities, that the use of antipsychotic drugs had to be cut by 30%. So you get that same memo just like everybody else does who has those sorts of facilities in their kit of offerings. But you have some really extraordinary people associated with Westminster Canterbury.
Very fortunate. Called
the Birdsongs from Suffolk.
So George and Sue Birdsong... Sue has been on our foundation board for many years. Her mother lived at Westminster Canterbury. She knows firsthand the power of living in community. And I'm proud to say they're picking out an apartment and they're going to be moving in shortly. So, the Birdsongs have always been generous supporters and understand our mission. And one day at a foundation board meeting, I was describing this technology, It's Never Too Late, to the foundation board. And we were talking about the fact that even though the nursing home is the smallest part of our business, it's probably the biggest part of our promise, which is when you come to the resort-style Bayside community, we're going to have a service level that takes care of you throughout your life and takes care of you well. And so when we looked at all the basic research that's out there, and there's tons of it talking about the importance of engagement for aging well, the thought came, how do we engage the people who are at most at risk of isolation? They've done the right thing. They've come to live in community. They've planned for their life. They're in a life plan community. And now through either dementia or frailty, they're in a private nursing section, private nursing home room, and they're again at risk for isolation. And there's a fellow by the name of Jack York who started this company, It's Never Too Late, because he saw what was going on with his own aunt or grandmother in a nursing home, and he set up computers for them, and he came back a month later, and they were all still in the box. Nobody was using them. But he knew intuitively the power of this, and he would go to conferences, and he would present to us these moving anecdotal stories of the transformation of certain individuals who were engaged with these computers. And I walked up to him at the end of one of those sessions and said, Jack, if I can find a donor and I can find academic partners, what we really need to break through with this technology is to get some really good scientific evidence and not just war stories and anecdotal stories, powerful as they are emotionally, to convince the aging services industry to make widespread adoption a moral imperative. And that's what we were hoping it would show. And when we got these results, I'm so excited because I do think we have a moral imperative. And now I feel under a moral obligation to get the word out in honor of the Birdsong's contribution and what can happen to change and better the standard of care for people in this country.
So when you, and this is critically important because everybody's, I mean, we all want to age better ourselves. We want better things for our parents and for our grandparents. And, one of the things we know is that the longer you can be healthy and the longer you can be engaged, the less the impact on caregivers is and the less the impact on financial systems as well. So when you talk about those academic partners, one of those academic partners came from EVMS. Dr. Scott Sauter is with us today. He's a licensed clinical psychologist and a neuropsychologist with Hampton Roads Neuropsychology. He's also an associate professor at EVMS and Eastern Virginia Medical School, and he's the principal investigator in this study that's known as the Birdsong Initiative. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you very much, Kathy. It's great to be here.
So when you found out about this, were you skeptical? I mean, you're a science guy. Did you say, we'll see how this goes?
I actually thought this was a great idea. I am a clinical neuropsychologist who had been a clinical director of a dementia unit. And because of confusion, these individuals may inadvertently harm each other just by misperceiving actions of others and inadvertently, and this is not necessarily on purpose, and we would use redirection and we would occupy their time at a tremendous cost of an individual with a group of individuals. Very difficult to do that. You had to be very creative and think about things they were interested in, get them involved in that, redirect their attention, and then occupy their time. But we couldn't do that on a regular basis, and it was very difficult to do it frequently. But that's what we did, essentially. So the idea of this IN2L technology was to be able to have access to material that was known to be of interest to the individual who has dementia as essentially a way to redirect any type of behavioral concerns, behavioral problems, occupy their time. And to do this, essentially, made a lot of sense. So the thought was how to set up a research methodology to test the question. So we randomly assigned 31 individuals to an experimental group, 31 individuals to a control group over a 12-week period of time. Our outcome measures were to look at reduction of depression of individuals, to take a look at reduction of behavior problems, take a look at medications, caregiver stress, so many different outcomes. And this really took a community to do this. Dr. Paul Arabich is a co-investigator, and Amy Powell is a clinical coordinator. Dr. Pollack and his students from Virginia Wesleyan, the recreational staff at Westminster Canterbury, individuals from Regent University Psychology Department and the statistics and methodology, all of this came together essentially to pull this off. And without all these people, it couldn't be done.
Yeah, it's such a great point. We're glad to have Dr. Wayne Pollack with us as well. He's an assistant professor in recreation and leisure studies at Virginia Wesleyan. Dr. Pollack, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
So tell me how the students were engaged in this, and you and the students at Virginia Wesleyan.
Well, we've been fortunate to have a long-standing relationship with Westminster Canterbury, and that in great part is due to the director of their therapeutic recreation department, Laura Mock. We've had a relationship where we've had students be able to volunteer their services, assist the therapeutic recreation staff, have done internships, and proudly we have placed many, they have hired many of our students as workers there. When Laura presented the idea of the IN2L and asked, we were actually in an assessment class. I was teaching
IN2L?
IN2L.
It's never too late.
Okay, got it.
I'm sorry.
Okay.
part of the program that we have at Wesleyan is an assessment class, assessment of recreational therapy and being able to develop rapport, be able to assess needs for clients. So I had worked with Laura to set up assignments for my students to come down, volunteer opportunities. And then the IN2L, the Birdsong Initiative, came to life, and we recognized that the students were going to have the opportunity to actually go in and conduct the assessments.
Right.
We were trained by the staff at EVMS, and the students went in, did the assessments. They obviously,
what a great experience.
Oh, this is tremendous.
This is real world. That's what you want, real
exactly
world experience.
That's exactly what we were looking for.
Yeah. We're at 18 minutes past the hour. It's 440-2665 or 1-800-940-2240 are the numbers where you can join us today. The bird songs are responsible for so much that's good in Suffolk and throughout the region. They have underwritten and generously funded so much in the region. This particular grant was $228,000 to underwrite this exploration and the engagement of academic partners in trying to figure out whether what seems like a good idea actually factually works. And it turns out it does. So tell us about the results. What did you find?
Well, comparing the experimental group versus the control group, we did not reach a statistical significance, but we did reach what was called a clinical significance.
Okay.
And the clinical significance is essentially translated into actual treatment. And that's really what we're excited about. We dealt with a group of population that was fairly impaired. If people know that a cognitive screening test of about between 10 and 12 out of 30 points is fairly low functioning. To get any type of results that were positive would be a tremendous gain. So we have clinical
significance. So can I stop you there for 1 second? When you say 10 to 12 on a scale of 30, can you give us an example of what that might look like? I mean, what could that person functionally do or not do?
That individual is completely dependent on others for their care. decision-making, activities of daily living. They're completely dependent on others. And unfortunately, that's why they were in the nursing home. And so that's essentially what that means. And to be able to have a high technology that they could have access to, where they had structured programs and to engage, is just phenomenal. So one of the things that we found that there was a reduction of 54% of individuals with their behavior problems.
Wow.
That's quite amazing. We had a decrease in intensity of 75% of those behavior problems.
So even if they did happen, they were not as intense, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yes. 47% found a decrease in their stress indication, and that is in the caregivers. We also had polled them as well. 41% had lower depression when they were actually using the computers.
It's a terrific problem in that level of impairment in population.
One of the most amazing things is that 4 out of 10 individuals reduced the need for antipsychotics. 40%.
And that's the one that so many people are really pointing to as very hopeful.
That's absolutely. If we were able to engage people to reduce behavior problems that necessitated an antipsychotic that ended up sedating them, to be able to do that with some type of an engagement is quite remarkable. And again, the IN2L system allows for the pre-programming of interested material where the person who's working with them doesn't have to come up with that creatively
right.
all the time.
Yeah. And so this is important, this whole aspect of reducing antipsychotic medication, because those medications can have some pretty dampening effects on people's personality. And
well, the antipsychotic medication is used essentially to slow a person down. It is essentially to sedate them so that they're not behaving abnormally or causing difficulties either to themselves or to others. The problem with antipsychotics and other kinds of medications like that is that older individuals do not metabolize the medication very quickly. It stays around in the system. So the more it's being used on a regular basis, there's a rebound effect that doesn't control the behavior, and it stays in the system longer, which potentially could cause problems internally, liver damage, for example, and other types of things as well.
Very, very interesting. This is a new technology being researched at Westminster Canterbury. Ben Uncle's with us today. He's the president and CEO thereof. That was Dr. Scott Sauter you just heard speaking. He's the principal investigator on the study, which is now known as the Birdsong Initiative, and rightly so, because the lovely Birdsongs underwrote it. And Dr. Wayne Pollack is with Virginia Wesleyan College, where he's an assistant professor in recreation and leisure studies. So we've used this term, it's never too late, and IN2L. This is a computer-based thing. Tell us what happens, Dr. Pollack.
Well, one of the things, as Dr. Sauter mentioned, is the students went in initially and did leisure assessment, leisure interest inventory with the individuals that were involved in the study to find out their avenues of interest. Then the IN2L company was able to set up individual programs so that we had a set group of choices, I guess, for the residents to make. They could have anything from, it could be dealing with physical functioning, in other words, range of motion, moving. It could be cognitive skills. It could be memory. It's music. It could be trivia. Mm-hmm. It could be travel. We've had residents that worked with our students where they were through the machine were able to, certainly they can do things like Skype and Facebook, but they were able to travel back into their home community, maybe back in a foreign country, and show where they used to live and start to reminisce about some of those things.
Wow. That's really neat. We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. So in some respects, you know, the physical piece of this is designed to improve strength and balance, which is really critically important as we age. And then you have a simulated bicycle program on the computer for the physical piece of it.
There is one that is attached. That the software package is amazing, the capabilities of what it can do. As a matter of fact, we were talking before the show that there is one of the residents that was involved with the study that had a stroke and now is back after some rehab living there, and they're going to use the IN2L in order to try to get her with range of motion and increase physical functioning.
Popping bubbles on the machine.
Yeah. Oh, that's exactly. Not, yeah.
And frankly, that's the only place where IN2L, it's never too late, the computer has been used more broadly. It was never a controversial thing to buy one machine if you could put it in front of an exercise bike.
Sure.
and the therapy department could bill more minutes because they peddled longer. Even the CFOs like those ideas, the chief financial officers. It's this widespread adoption. And just to paint a picture of the computer and what it did in this study, we fabricated 23-inch touchscreens, simple touchscreens interfaces, onto carts that could slide under your bed so that when you're ready to engage and it's designed to fit your interests, you just pull the computer to you and you start doing it. We had a lady who was nonverbal who we didn't think could do anything, and she loves solitaire, and she learned how to get to solitaire, and she plays a mean game of solitaire.
Wow.
We had a lady who was nonverbal who, because of the reconnection to Germany and all of that, was verbalizing more, and she started to want to teach her student partner German. How cool is that, to restore their personhood so that they can give back? So if you think of these machines, it's 23-inch touchscreen that you can pull towards you, or your nursing aide can pull towards you, and that's another cool part of the story. And you go where you want to, and you pick out the things on your times and on your terms. So if you think of the early days of the internet, we had AOL because the internet was too complicated for us all, and AOL went out and bought Time Magazine and the content and all of that stuff. That's what IN2L does. It's really a content company that gets these particular areas of interest to older adults, and it aggregates them in a way, and then it puts a simple interface so that they can engage and get to that stuff. So that's the value proposition. And when you engage them and that sort of thing, we've seen, as Dr. Sauter said, the MoCA scores, which is Montreal Cognitive Assessment. It's only a 30-point scale. 27% of them at the end of the study, they all aged 100%, continued aging. And 27% increased their cognitive score.
Wow.
And on a 30-point scale, they increased by 4.9 points.
That's fantastic.
It's really dramatic. And we only had them for 12 weeks with these people.
Yeah.
So think what we could do with more time.
Yeah.
Well, one thing, so just quickly interject from a science perspective, a study recently came out trying to think about Alzheimer's from a different perspective. That's not that we're losing memories, but we're not getting access
to
memories.
You can access them, right. Yeah.
And that the access, if you engage an individual, you might be able to unlock that access to be able to have that available to the person. And then they, because of that engagement and unlocking that memory, they actually start to become more involved, they become more attentive, and they start to interact more.
You know, it strikes me when you're talking about that, that it, one of the great unfairnesses, I think, about Alzheimer's is that you know, science, as you just said, tells us there's stuff going on in there. It's just a question of accessing it. And it seems to me that this kind of thing, when you see that light bulb go off and you get that, you can find what that person still can access and explore that and sort of widen that pathway a little bit. That has to be extremely gratifying.
It's really fun to see.
Yeah. And tell us about the relationship between the person who's doing the program and the person who's helping them, whether it's a student or whoever else it is, because that seems like it would be a real foundational relationship.
Oh, it is. And one of the requirements was that the students made a commitment to come 5 hours a week so that they could stay with consistency with a resident.
Yeah.
So there were tremendous relationships. Many students didn't like it when it ended, but that's part of it. The relationship also enabled the students to learn more about the individual. It, like I said earlier, it provided tremendous opportunity. What we started out with just trying to interview to get the experience being prepared for a clinical position turned into the reality of being able to develop rapport, to be able to develop a trusting relationship and assist these individuals, and most of it was cognitive functioning.
You know, it's really interesting, too, when you think about what's happened in America over the last 40, 50 years in terms of mobility, and you think about the fact that these younger people are very often haven't grown up around their grandparents. Some have, some haven't. And so this is a great experience because I think there are a lot of young people I observe that really, because they haven't grown up around their grandparents and because there are very few social structures that, if you're not in a family relationship, bring you into contact with older people on a regular basis, it seems to me this could be a new and exciting experience for some of them.
Oh, it could. There's a documentary out there about cyber seniors where all kinds of high schools are pairing up with organizations that are in aging services to link people and mentor relationships. And of course, this is a little different than that, but there's all kinds of intergenerational possibilities. We had a lady who met her great, great grandchild who was born in London through this technology, through this computer.
Wow.
We had one lady who attended the wedding of her granddaughter who couldn't get there otherwise, and we broadcast on the big screen who did that.
Nice.
You can get this designed so that you just touch a picture of your daughter and it'll place the Skype call. And so the opportunity and the convenience for intergenerational contact and staying in touch with your family. I remember watching one person do this, and it was funny. She was looking at the screen and saying, "Well, that sure looks like you." And it was hard to believe that that they could have a live conversation.
Yeah.
But it is so powerful when you watch that. And you were talking about the relationships with the caregivers. All this is great, but if it's not practical, it won't get adopted. If it's not affordable and practical, it won't get adopted. And when we saw these results, we had the computers in mothballs waiting for to move up. And we'll replicate the study in assisted living, the higher cognitive levels. And I said, get them out of mothballs, put them in there. We're not going to do another study in the nursing home, so we're not going to pollute the... It had too much impact. We have a moral obligation to redeploy these with those people.
So it's so good, you have to, yeah.
And here's, and so that's a key point. The second key point, which don't tell anybody on the staff at Westminster Canterbury, but the second key point is that a lot of the naysaying is that they won't be able to do this on their own or use this without somebody holding their hands. And they had the students only 1 hour a day for 5 days a week. Well, the study showed, because we could track usage, that they used it on top of those 5 hours, an average of 30 hours on their own.
Wow.
And part of what's happening in terms of the relationship with the caregivers is when the nurse's aide sees that Mrs. McGillicuddy, fictitious name, of course, Mrs. McGillicuddy may get agitated or combative in the morning because short-term memory issues and something has gotten her agitated, and then they play the laughing baby video or the aquarium. I defy anybody to frown for a laughing baby
video.
Yeah,
that's so true.
Now Mrs. McGillicuddy has been redirected. She's in a happier frame of mind. She gets dressed with ease. And so these computers obviously are easier to operate because they're intended for people with cognitive deficits. Yeah. So, our nursing aides see the value of it, and it makes their life better. Dr. Sauter talked about 47% reduction in stress of caregivers. So we redeployed these machines, and not one person has asked for extra student volunteers on the redeployment or an increase in staff. So I am convinced that once you get over the hump of the staff buying in and seeing the value of this, that it can be done with existing staff levels and really helps them focus on other things if they're not spending so much time, as Dr. Sauter said, as individuals trying to redirect somebody who has combative behavior.
So where do you see this going? I mean, you've done this experiment. It was 12 weeks, enormously good results. You're going to go to assisted living, right?
Right. Yeah, we're going to repeat it in assisted living. I'm going to every place that will listen to me.
Yeah.
And sharing these results. And I think that in 5 years' time, my goal would be that you walk into a place, an organization that serves the needs of older adults who are at that stage of life or that stage of their service, and you would ask, you have water in this place, right? You have air conditioning in this place, right? Well, certainly you have technology to re-engage or engage my mom, because we know that's what works. And I see it as a game changer in terms of really applying the research to elevate the standard of care.
It's very interesting. I was in a facility recently where I went, sort of walked down the hall, looked at their little library filled with VHS tapes, and I thought, who has a VHS player anymore, for goodness sakes? This is the point. I mean, I think we're really talking about transformative technology here that could make such a difference moving forward. We're at 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. Wondering if you may have a family member with dementia, wondering if you have concerns about the amount of medication they're taking, and, you know, this is a piece of the puzzle here, and a puzzle is exactly what it is. Wondering whether you've had challenges getting them to engage socially, and what you're thinking about, what you're hearing about this new program, IN2L, It's Never Too Late. dignity through technology. So this is one fellow who's come up with this. You met him at a conference, and here we go. Mm-hmm. He must be excited about the results you're getting.
He's very excited about these results. Yeah. He's taken our video promotionals, our videotape of reporting and unveiling the results last month, and he and I will present together at the Leading Age, which is the Professional Association for Aging Services Providers in the state of Virginia, our state chapter. We're on the conference roster for May, and we will present this.
Wow.
And we're gonna invite, and hopefully the Bird Songs will be able to be there as
well.
Oh,
that would be great.
And we're ready to present this to the National Association. I mean, as Dr. Sauter said, it's clinically significant, which is reliable enough to alter the method of treatment
right.
and care.
It's
and
amazing.
That's what we're setting about to do. And so we can't do that unless we get the word out. Now, I've later, before the end of this month, our five-minute capsule video about the results of this will be shown in a online conference to about 1,000 aging services providers, our five-minute video in its entirety.
Yeah.
We showed it at Washington, D.C., and immediately someone came up and said, I'm teaching on this subject, best practices in technology. I want to play the whole video. Can I use it as part? I said, yes, you certainly
yeah.
can. We had only one other provider in the room when we first unveiled the results from a local area across in the peninsula. And so it's a sample group of one. But at the end of the presentation, when he saw that the cognitive ability actually increased, depression went down, all those things that Dr. Sauter talked about, he ran up to me and he says, we have money in our foundation. We need to implement this in our nursing homes. And that was music to
That's
me.
Because really
that
great.
Is the goal, to not just light a candle, but hold it up
yeah.
and help other people this implement
is what,
this.
This is what I so appreciate about your leadership at Westminster Canterbury, because you've done that in a lot of different things, and you won't tell this, but I will. But I think you have a great gift for transforming the space you're in, but also, as you say, sort of elevating that up and giving and showing what can be done. And, you know, as you said, 100% of us will get older. That will happen. It's not like this is a market that there's a very small slice of and everybody's fighting for it. We will all age. This is a huge, huge, from a business perspective, market moving forward. Some very, very big challenges in terms of availability and in terms of ability to pay for these services. So there's a lot of an opportunity in this marketplace. And so I appreciate the way that you're sharing that with everybody else. It was very interesting. This woman who came to town last night, Ai-Jin Poo, who worked again with domestic workers early on, noticed that the domestic workers that she was working with, their bosses were asking them to increasingly work with their aging relatives. And she thought, you know, gee, there's a problem there. And she's been looking at this issue from the standpoint of availability of those workers, what they're paid, whether they have a career path, and bringing real dignity to that work. And that seems to be another thing that you've really done at Westminster Canterbury with the Living Wage Initiative and some of the other initiatives that you've really been bringing great dignity to that work. That is so important.
Well, there's... it's the right thing to do, and I have additional positive pressure. We were founded by two Christian churches, and we are a nonprofit, faith-based organization, and so I know who I'm accountable to, and that makes it easier to do the right thing, and it emboldens me to want to do different things and creative things that makes the staff, our team, the professionals who work there, their lives better, who are often living on the margin barely a living wage.
Right.
So we decided we were going to pay a living wage whether the market demanded it or not. Our board and our residents were 100% behind it. And so that's the joy and the freedom of working in a faith-based nonprofit organization, is you have absolute freedom and an obligation to just do the right thing. Now, you mentioned people at home, and so this may be important to your listeners, and it just occurred to me when you mentioned that. But we have begun to deploy the IN2L computers in people's homes who want
them. Wow.
And so we have an individual who enjoyed and used the computer a great deal. And so if people are interested in that opportunity, they can contact us, and we could give you a number on the website
sure.
if you're interested in that. But I do think that IN2L, it's never too late, will become less and less of a hardware company and more of a content provider. And someday, hopefully, you'll get an icon that you could use on your iPad or your or any other computer that you already own that's accessible. Right now, it's
wow,
a little bit
tight.
Wow,
that's really interesting. Yeah.
And it, and the content is so varied, and we know it works so well. You were talking about the VHS tapes. Well, let's say your thing is I Love Lucy reruns. Yeah.
Which it totally is.
How did I know that about you? Anyway, your thing is I Love Lucy reruns, and you want to see the grape scene, mushing the grapes or the candy bar
scene.
Great
scene, yeah.
The computer, you can go to old radio and old TV shows and call that up, and you can watch the rerun of I Love Lucy and that you like. So there's the world of possibilities. There is no limit with the technology. It's always there. It doesn't go home at 5 o'clock. It's right by your bedside, and it comports to your interests when you're interested in engaging it. Yeah. And that's the tremendous
advantage. The only thing you have to do, and this is what you have to look out for, you have to make sure that now we are not going to have Thanksgiving dinner with teenagers with their handhelds, grandparents with their handhelds.
I love it.
Those of us in the middle are going, everybody put down your devices, seriously.
And maybe they'll Skype each other at the table.
You never know. That could absolutely happen. But the technology is really marvelous, isn't it? This is the great thing about technology as a thing. You know, it's neither good nor bad. It's a tool. And when you can find ways to use it for powerful good, it just seems to me that's just all the better. Dr. Scott Sauter, what do you see for this in terms of continued study? What sorts of studies do you think need to be done on this to take it to that next step?
Well, we'd like to take a look at, again, a rigorous methodology with a group of individuals with a higher level of cognitive function, not so low. We want to be very careful about the sample size so that we can be sure that we have enough power analysis to make a statistical significance between experimental controls. We want to take a look at that very specifically. We're going to use essentially the same techniques with the structured hour program with the students from Virginia Wesleyan. So what we've learned from this particular study is we'll be able to apply it to a higher level of cognitive function and still maintain a rigorous methodology. And we're looking for statistical significance between experimental and control.
We're at 18 minutes before the hour. It's 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. That's Dr. Scott Sauter. He is a licensed clinical psychologist, principal investigator in this study that's known as the Birdsong Initiative. And this is a program that was launched at Westminster Canterbury with a tremendously generous grant of $228,000 from George and Sue Birdsong. Again, folks who've been responsible for so much that's great in the region. And Dr. Wayne Pollock is with us as well. He's an assistant professor in Recreation and Leisure Studies at Virginia Wesleyan. Ben Unkle is the president and CEO of Westminster Canterbury on the Chesapeake Bay. We're coming up on 17 minutes before the hour. You know, Ben, you said you're going to be presenting this at a big conference, and Dr. Sauter, I'm sure you will be too, and well done for putting coastal Virginia on the map. Great job. But I wonder, as you look at trends, you know, I was very struck by this conversation last night about the sheer numbers of people that we will have aging, and not all of them will be at Westminster Canterbury because y'all can't hold them all, right? That's one reason. But what kinds of trends do you see in terms of housing and care as you go to conferences and what have you? What kinds of results or what kinds of trends are you seeing nationally and internationally?
Well, everyone is getting into home and community-based services because there are people who cannot afford to be in the type of residential setting that we offer. And I think doing that well, effectively, and economically, and doing that smart is a major thing that we have to get good at. And we, in fact, manage home health and hospice agencies for 5 other life plan communities.
We've
gotten into that business both feet because it really needs to be done well, and it's the wave of the future to do that as a supplement to our mission and our service. So this kind of technology, as it becomes cheaper and cheaper, and it will, is really important to bring out to homes. Monitoring. There's so much that can be done with motion monitoring.
Right.
Bluetooth devices that can measure your blood pressure, that can tell whether you've taken your medications so that You can give that safeguard for people in their homes currently, or their daughter can check in every day and see if the blood pressure's right or the medication's been taking. That's another trend. In Japan, they're working fast and furiously over robots, and they believe that there are some robots that can take over some of the elements of senior care. I have not seen that demonstrated yet.
Yeah, that's
fascinating. I want to be picked up by a robot if I need to be picked up. But, you know, who knows? 15 years ago, we wouldn't have been thinking about this either. So technology constantly surprises us.
It does. And in a cultural context, you have to think about that as well, because different communities have different cultural expectations around that and different needs. And so it's very interesting. This Ajahn Poo, who spoke last night, was saying that in Hawaii, they've actually gotten a policy initiative in place where they are funding or getting ready to fund 365 days of caregiving. So they've got this fund set up so that if you are a caregiver and you need a break or you need some support or you've had to quit your job so that you can come home and take care of your parent, that they actually have a fund set up to help. You can apply to this fund to get some compensation for that because that is a huge financial burden when folks have to make those kinds of decisions.
And the caregivers need respite.
Yeah.
I mean, you can burn out caregiving, and then now you've got two people who need care.
You're right. Exactly.
And I would say to your listeners in this area, we're very fortunate. I was very impressed. I was at a presentation, and it's not going to be what you think. Adult Protective Services, everybody thinks, is the cop when there's abuse. It's more than that. And so if you are struggling at home, if you're listening right now and you're struggling with, how do I get some respite care? There are some programs in Virginia Beach, and that's the lifeline to call. Adult Protective Services that have some relief mechanisms. Using technology, we're going to see virtual senior centers. We're going to see ways in which you can go back and sleep at home with, maybe you're living with your son or daughter, or maybe you're living on your own, or maybe you have a nanny pod connected to the house.
Yeah.
But we're going to see ways through the power of technology where we can get those folks engaged in community and engaged in life more, which is the secret sauce during the day. And that will make the job of the, going back to the domestic worker who now has to care for an aging parent of the family, not just the children and cleaning the house.
Yeah.
Those sorts of engagements are going to be important.
You know, it's interesting. You mentioned the nanny pod or the granny pod. And if you have not seen this, you should head to a website near you and just search that granny pod. And you will see what we're talking about. It's sort of a little. It's not a shed. It's more like a little trailer contraption that you put in the backyard. So it's designed for folks who may need to expand their homes but can't really expand their homes. And it's equipped with all kinds of technology that allow the people who live in the house to monitor this. A few too many of you are sending that to me, and I don't know what message you're trying to send, but I have noticed this, and I am on to you. So it's called a granny pod.
That's
and
right.
They're pretty, I mean, they're very highly sophisticated, but, you know, the idea is that as we think about different housing options, and in fact, that's what we'd love to hear from you about this afternoon, whether you are somebody who has altered your family living arrangement to accommodate an aging relative. Maybe you've added to your house. Maybe you've decided to buy a new house together and put everybody all in the same house. What's that scenario for you? 440-2665, 1-800-940-2240. I was talking with a friend of mine the other day who's about my age, and she said, and this is very interesting, she has four generations in her house. She has her parents, herself, her daughter, and her daughter's kids. And they have a massive house, fortunately, but I just think we're going to find some very interesting living arrangements, and probably people who are unrelated just deciding to put together their own community to achieve what you're talking about.
I think so. The magnitude of the challenge is just mind-boggling in terms of numbers of people who are going to need care, and how does our society meet those needs? We're going to have to get more creative. Necessity is the mother of invention, and there's a lot of necessity coming to how to take care of older adults. One point it reminded me of is that, you know, there are a lot of people who are doing the best they can and taking care of somebody and honoring their father or their mother and taking care of them at home. And whatever we can do in the way of technology to make that burden easier. For example, I have an uncle, a godfather, who he was a person of means, but psychotropic drugs, he was in that combative stage, didn't work for him. He was one of the 3 or 4% that had a very intense reaction, almost died from them. And then you're left with no pharmacological intervention. If this had been available at that to him, and you think of all the people who don't have means, who are just coping and struggling to survive in the house, doing the right thing, taking care of mom or dad, as we develop more and more of these technologies to help ease that burden and make that life saner and more livable and enjoyable for both parties.
Sure. It's interesting. We did a show a couple of weeks ago, and I am still haunted by a call from this woman. It was late in the show, and she was just the human embodiment of that stress. You know, she said she has her mother at home. She's had to quit her job. It's very stressful. Can't afford a facility. And you could just, it was heartbreaking. You just hear in her voice, she's trying so hard, as you say, to do what she believes is the right thing by her mother, and yet she's coming apart at the seams. So we sent her to senior services because they do have some great support groups and the like. And so there are, if you find yourself in that situation, and it's easy to get, it's easy to really get downtrodden in that and not to feel very hopeful about it. And I hope if that's your story that you will pick up the phone and call some of the services for aging, because there are support groups, there are respite care options, as you indicated, through the Commonwealth. There is help out there. Is it enough help? Probably not. But as this silver tsunami continues to age and becomes so much more, it will not, and becomes so much more prevalent, it really cannot be ignored. There are 5 to 7 states working now on a program similar to Hawaii's, where they're looking at 365 days of funding for caregiving. And it's pretty clear that this is really the generation that's gonna change things and is going to redefine what that social contract looks like. Paul's on the line from Williamsburg. Hi, Paul. You're on the air.
My experience with both caring for both parents separately over a period of 4 years was that you wind up with a lot of mixed emotions. And it's hard to deal with that because you don't know what's right and what's wrong. And I guess the comment that I wanted to leave with is that almost every case is different. And it's hard to sort of have like a blanket, like this is the way it should be done or shouldn't be done. In every case, both the people are different and the relationships are different and the needs are different. And I think that's probably one of the interesting parts about this problem. It's not like one size fits all.
Boy, Paul, you are so right, because we are talking about human beings here at the end of the day. I really appreciate that, because that too may give somebody the idea that just because you did it this way with your mom doesn't mean you're going to do it that way with your dad. So,
well, that's right. Even with this technology, the variety is the strength. But let me say this, it's really important. If you want to see one of the most engaging, compelling documentaries, Dr. Sauter pointed it out to me, Alive Inside, you can get it on Netflix tonight, and you just watch the first 10 minutes and you'll get it. And they demonstrated the power of music. Just load up a $40 iPod Nano with your loved one's music that of their youth, and put the headphones on their ear and watch them come alive. There's something special about music in the brain. Mm-hmm. So you don't need necessarily technology that's thousands of dollars in your home to make a difference, or in organizations to make a difference. We're testing one particular mode of engagement, but engagement is the unifying secret sauce. And there are lots of ways to engage the brain and engage the person. But music is a particularly inexpensive and powerful one.
That's a great point. G is on the line from Virginia Beach. Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'm one of 6 children. Our oldest sister, being 78, she's the only one of us that actually lives not in the Virginia Beach area, but in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And excuse me for a second. About 2 years ago, we always get together on the 4th of July, and she was here and visiting with her, and she's an eloquent speaker. She had a degree in English and journalism and actually taught at Princess Anne back in the day. But anyway, she has fallen into this, excuse me.
It sounds like it's a really hard thing to talk about.
It is. It's very difficult because she is the oldest of 6, and we're very close family. But anyway, she is in a nice place in Winston-Salem, and so my brothers and sisters, you know, have visited with her. And the thing is, you go and talk to her, and you immediately, you know, you say, "Anna Bland, who, you know, who am I?" or whatever, yeah. And she, you know, she recognizes us, and but she's not very verbal. But by the same token, she's always been one to correct grammar and and so forth. And so if you, I would, you know, say something that was not grammatically correct, and she would say, and she would correct, you know, correct me.
Right.
And this program, excuse me.
Sure. Just take your time.
I just happened to be listening to it, and I just want to know, I think it would be the stimuli that would,
sure,
you know, kind of resurrect her spirit, if nothing else. And
sure.
And so I'm totally interested. And by the way, I've been on the waiting list. My name's on the waiting list at Westminster Canterbury, as I live close to the facility. I'm not ready to go now, but, yeah, you know, I've been on it since I was 58, and I'm 68 now.
Well, let me give you the name of this technology, G, and you may. This is how good news spreads, right? So maybe you can share this with the folks where your sister is. It's called It's Never Too, the number two, Late, Dignity Through Technology. The best way you can learn more is at in2l.com, in2l.com. And gee, I'm just going to tell you something, that on the interwebs, your sister, if she can access that, will have all manner of opportunities to correct people's grammar. The internet is full of people who need to have their grammar corrected. So I think this really could be marvelous for you and for her. And I can really hear how special she is to you and how painful this is to watch this decline. So I'm very hopeful that this might be something that could keep her spirit with you just a little bit longer.
And if we can help you, Nancy King at 496-1464 for a local number is the head of our Home and Community-Based Services Division, Westminster Canterbury at Home, and we can set you up, and we can collaborate with somebody in your area to get this technology to them.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Gee, thank you for calling. I really appreciate it.
Kathy, did you say Nancy King?
Nancy King.
496-1464?
Correct.
Thank you so much.
You bet, G. Good luck to you. Thank you so much for the call. I want to thank all of you for being with us today. Dr. Wayne Pollack, thank you for being with us from Virginia Wesleyan. Go Marlins. Dr. Scott Sauter, thank you for being with us from EVMS, principal investigator in this study, which is rightly known as the Birdsong Initiative.
Nice thank you. My you pleasure to be here.
And Ben Uncle, I'm always glad to see you. Thank you for all you're doing there at Westminster Canterbury and for the community at large. It's great to see you. Thank you for
being
here.
Great to see you again.
Well, we are coming up on the end of another hour, and I hope you found something valuable in the program. in2l.com is the website where you can learn more about the technology we've discussed today. If a crab cake is in your heart and soul today, you want to come over to 5200 Hampton Boulevard. There is a very excellent crab cake food truck right out front of this building, right even as we speak. Tomorrow, we're going to be talking with the head of the Culinary Institute of Virginia's new culinary nutrition program. It's a very interesting program because, you know, we're all, or at least most of us, are trying to eat healthier. We'll also celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel with John Warren, who's written a new book about that. What an amazing construction story that is. Let's keep the conversation going on Twitter and Instagram. You can use the handle at Kathy Lewis Talks, or email your show ideas to hearsay@whrv.org. Up next, it's Radio Lab. And tonight on WHRO TV 15, it's Secrets of Noah's Ark. I would not have wanted to be Mrs. Noah. We'll see you tomorrow.